This is the Pitch Vision Academy show number 80. This is the Pitch Vision Academy cricket show. You can find us at pitchvision.com and email us on mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. My name's David Hinchcliffe in the UK.
And I'm Kevin Sabath from Australia. Coming up on the show, we smashed through the covers with Gary Palmer. Our guest coach Nick Northcote answers your questions, and David gets a game in despite the rain. Well, David, raining in the UK and you still get a game in, that's a bit unusual, isn't it?
Well, yeah, it is the level that we play. Normally you get a few drops of rain and everybody says, right, let's not mess around, let's call it off. But it wasn't that bad. It was grey, it was cold, it was your typical English spring day that you imagine it to be, a little bit of spit in the air, but we didn't get enough rain to actually come off, so we didn't come off and we got a full game in. Well, say a full game, it was a pretty shoddy performance from us. I lost the toss and was inserted on a green pitch with a bit of extra bounce in it. But it was wet on top, hard underneath. We started quite poorly. At one point we were 23 for 4, then we were 46 for 5. Luckily, chap who we called in at the last minute scored a blistering 52. He just went out and smashed it virtually from ball one when everybody else was scratching around. I hung around for about five overs for naught. A couple of other players got some very scratchy-looking low scores. And he just came out and smashed it all around. He scored 52 out of our total, which was 123, when we were all bowled out in 35 overs, or just over 34 overs. So as you recall, if you're bowled out in less than 50 overs, the opposition get the overs that are left. So they had an extra 15 overs. So they had 65 overs in which to get 123 runs. Pretty easy, you would imagine. But no, we bowled brilliantly. We just took, they were kept up with the rate quite easily because the rate was, you know, whatever it was, two and over, something, you know, around there. So they kept up with the rate quite easily, but we just kept taking wickets. Nobody, none of them could get going. Their highest score was 28, and we bowled them out for 89 in just over 30 overs. So a great victory. We were a little bit lucky in that we had a first team bowler who had hurt his groin. And he was told by the doctor, don't play for 2 weeks. But we said to him, come and play for us. So he backed up the order. He didn't get any runs. And we were doing okay without him with our four main bowlers. And I said to him, how's the groin, Lee? Do you reckon you can have a bowl? And he went, yeah, go on then. And he bowled four overs, one maiden, three for five, five for three.
It's pretty good.
Three wickets for five runs. So he absolutely tore through the tail, basically, just when we needed him. And we won. That was our first victory of the season at maximum points. And we're off and running.
Yeah. Nice. Sounds like a good start to your season, David. But personally, how did your captaincy go?
It's quite hard, you know, to concentrate, especially when it's a low-scoring game and they're getting closer and closer to your score. It's quite hard to stay focused on exactly where the ball's bowling, which batsman is facing, and you have to make sure that each fielder is where you wanted them to be, because it's very easy for the fielder to forget. You know, if you've got two different fields for two different bowlers, and then you've got a field for each batsman as well, that's a lot of thinking if you're in a different fielder, if you're in a different position for every batsman and every bowler. So you have to keep your eye on people all the time, make sure they're standing in the right place. And, you know, don't forget that if you've moved someone to the leg side, that they stay there. So, you know, there's a lot of thinking going on, but I kept on top of it most of the time. I cut off the batsman's favourite shots as quickly as I could. I think I only made one mistake, which was our leg spinner was bowling to a left-hander, and he kept the... And I set more of a leg spin field than what I should have set, which is a bit more of an off spin field because the ball was going into the leg side more often because he was hitting it with the spin. But luckily, we had a very experienced player in the side who was a former captain of the first team. He's getting on a little bit now, but he's a former captain of the first team, and he just had a quiet word with me at the end of the over. He said, that guy you put in at extra cover, he's probably going to be better off at deep mid-wicket because that's where the ball's going. So as soon as he said that, yeah. I was like, yeah, of course it was. Yeah, so he had a little quiet word with me, and we sorted it out between us. It's, you know, it's good when players can sort these things out between them. You don't have to think about it too much, especially when you're keeping as well.
Yeah.
You look, have a quick look around the field, think, yeah, I think that's right, and then you have to set yourself to take the ball.
Did you feel the pressure of having to concentrate on your keeping as well as concentrating on your tactics and everything else? I mean, did you feel that your keeping skills dropped, or were you did you manage to maintain both of them?
I think certainly standing up, it's a lot harder to concentrate standing up, I found.
Yeah.
Standing back, it's not too bad. I mean, it's still difficult because you're just, you know, you're going from one form of concentration to another. So, you know, you've got a bit of sweat on your brow the entire time.
Yeah.
But standing up, sometimes, just sometimes, you just kind of drift off into this, oh, the bowler's running in now, here comes the ball, and suddenly you're not concentrating hard enough, and suddenly you're just thinking, oh, hang on a minute, I missed that one because I wasn't really concentrating properly. So, yeah, you have to kind of remind yourself. I mean, the thing that I use is a little trigger. I say bounce to myself just to remind myself that, you know, I've got to watch for the bounce of the ball and then get my hands and head in the right position as quickly as possible. So, yeah, that was the only part. So there was a couple of little things. I mean, I took two catches, didn't drop anything, but just a couple of times when, you know, I was a little bit untidy standing up, you know, when I could have been a little bit tidier, but that's by the by. So yeah, looking forward to next week. Got an equally strong side coming up on Saturday. So fingers crossed we'll have another win.
Yeah, nice. Sounds good. Well, we have Gary Palmer again with us to answer a batting question for us this week. Gary was a first-class cricketer who played for Somerset, and he now helps younger players in the game with CCM Academy. So if you want to find out more about Gary Palmer's coaching, please visit www.pitchvision.com/Gary Palmer. Let's have a listen to the chat Gary had with David earlier this week.
This question is from Chris May, and he asks, can you give me the required attributes to be a county/international player at the ages between 12 and 15?
You have to be obsessive about playing cricket. You have to absolutely love the game and want to be doing it all the time. You have to be fit and physically fit, good hand-eye coordination, a burning desire to succeed at all costs. Above all, you've got to love the game and love practicing. Sooner someone of that age can get into the mindset of really focusing towards a good technique and lots of grooving and hitting perfect shots and just getting as much practice as possible, the better. And the other thing is, I've noticed with a lot of players I've worked with, the good ones are generally the ones that learn fast. You tell them something, they just digest it and they do it. Other people, it seems to, for whatever reason, take that little bit longer, and that seems to be a skill within itself. You need opportunities, you need a little bit of luck.
Would you say that at that age it's important for a player to have a range of sporting experiences and not just be sort of single-minded on cricket, but to be, you know, to be at least playing one other sport to get that kind of physical literacy?
No, definitely, definitely. I mean, I've been coaching a young girl at the moment who's really, really talented, and I believe she'll play for England. And when I ask her background, this is after doing a three-hour session with her, seeing her, as soon as you align her better, give her good balance and good techniques, she just improved instantly. And when I say to her, what other sports do you play? I wasn't surprised, and she says to me, well, I play football for West Ham under 19s, and I've been very close to getting in the England under 19s football squad. She's playing cricket. I haven't been playing that long, and guess what? She's really good already. She has got that burning desire to succeed, to learn. She loves cricket, absolutely loves playing cricket, and she's determined to make it. Great, great players are generally great practicers. Now, if kids, young cricketers, can learn great practice, you know, right attitude, the right things to be focusing on, you know, the detail of it all, then, and they put the hard work in and the effort, that should all lead to them, as long as they're physically fit and got good hand-eye coordination, that should lead to them being very talented. I mean, the last one, which is sort of out of your control a little bit as a coach, is the mental side. What are they like under fire? You know, are they brave when someone's trying to knock their head off? What are they like in a pressure situation? You can help them with that. You can evolve where they are with it. But sometimes there are people that do just, you just can't change their mindset. They don't like it. It's too quick. I'm going to get hit. I don't like fast bowling. End of. Sometimes, like I say, that can be turned around. You can give them processes to deal with it. But at the end of the day, there will be kids that will hit a wall when faced with certain stresses and pressures, and they won't make it. And the ones that make it will be the ones that can deal with it, whether it be naturally or they've got a bit of natural there and they find some processes to take them over the line and give them the other bit.
Thank you, Gary, for your time. Again, if you want to find out more about Gary Palmer and his coaching, please visit www.pitchvision.com/Gary Palmer. So we've got a few questions this week and we have Nick Northcote to help us out, so let's get straight into it. Welcome to the question section for this week, and this week we're lucky to have Nick Northcote, who's a former first-class cricketer who played in South Africa, and he's played international cricket for Italy as well, and he currently has a coaching ebook called Wicketkeeping, The Ultimate Guide to Mastering the Art, which you can download from www.pitchvision.com/academy. So thanks for helping us out, Nick.
Hi, thanks very much for having me.
Nick and David, our first question is from Seb, and he says, I'm a wicketkeeper from Scotland, under 15s, and I was wondering if you had any good tips or drills to help me stand out, because I'm moving to Surrey after the summer. I feel there'll be a lot more competition there, as I would have to try and get into the 17s. So, Nick and David, both of you are keepers. David, how do you think Seb should approach this?
It's a good question. I think one of the key words that I heard there in the question was, how do I stand out as a keeper? And I know what he means, but it's almost, to me, almost standing out as a keeper isn't something that you want to do. Standing out as a keeper means that you're either doing something brilliant or something terrible. And most of the job of a wicketkeeper is not either brilliance or being terrible. It's doing the very, very simple things very effectively and efficiently. And that only comes with a lot of very boring practice. Someone throwing you tennis balls or throwing you cricket balls and you just catching again and again and again until the technique becomes automatic. You don't have to think about it anymore. So when you get out into that game situation, you're not thinking about technique, you're just thinking about catching the ball. And that is the most important thing for me, working every day at the really boring stuff.
It's definitely not a good idea to try and stand out. And probably be in Seb's best interest to just rather try and focus on that consistency that you mentioned and being as tidy and reliable as possible, you know, as regularly as possible. It's a difficult one because as a wicketkeeper, you're competing for one spot in a team and you're not getting judged on the runs that you score, the wickets you take as a batsman or a bowler. So you've really just got to trust. You've got to be as safe and reliable as possible and then just trust that the coaches and the selectors that matter are in the know about these things and will notice your sort of reliability behind the stumps. But trying to be flashy is a very high-risk sort of strategy, you know, and trying to stand out as a wicketkeeper. And I really wouldn't recommend it.
One thing that I heard, a philosophy of fitness training, which applies just as much to wicketkeeper, I think, is if something is important, then do it every day. And if you're not catching balls every day in some way or another, and making sure your technique is right in some way or another, then you're not doing yourself justice as a wicketkeeper. So it's not just about the specific drills, and those drills are pretty boring things. You know, it's someone standing there and underarming a tennis ball to you and you catching it and them say and you looking at your foot position, looking at your hand position, making sure that your balance and your weight is in the right place and your head is in the right place and your fingers are in the right place, making sure that is grooved over and over again for all the different types of catching that you're going to be doing. It's about doing that every day. And sometimes you have to go and bother people and say, can you come and help me? For example, if you're practicing leg side work, then chances are you're going to need two people. You're going to need someone to throw the ball, and you're going to need someone to stand in the way and pretend to be the batsman. So you're going to need to bother people and get as much practice as you can. Because the wicketkeeper, not like a bowler, a wicketkeeper can't go away on his own very easily and practice. He needs people to help him. And just keep, and for me, the key is just keep doing those really boring drills over and over again until you're perfect in practice. Because if you're perfect in practice, you'll be close to perfect in the middle.
Yeah. On that point about a practice partner, I think there's a sort of desperate need to identify someone that's sort of maybe a batsman that doesn't bowl at all, that sort of ends up standing around in the nets after having his knock, or someone that's just sort of willing to help you with your work and just that can team up with you throughout the season, you know, and just knock you as many balls as possible when they're not batting. I think having a dedicated practice partner, someone that's sort of willing to do that, whether you have to bribe them with dinner or whatever it takes, I think that is an absolutely critical thing to sort of establish right in the beginning of the season.
Thanks, guys, for that. Our next question is from Damien. And if you guys remember, Damien had a question earlier in one of our earlier cricket shows about driving the ball and his shot selection and playing late. And he's responded to that. He says, "Thanks, guys, that really helped. But no, I don't have access to a bowling machine, and you're right. I rarely play on my back foot, basically because the pitches we play on are not really batting pitches. They have a lot of variations, like sharp bounce, or it keeps low, so we're encouraged to play on our front foot a lot. Another thing is that we only bat on clay pitches during match time, and we always train on a concrete pitch, so we're not used to the variation of the clay pitches. How could we as batsmen adjust to the different pitches?" So how do you think Damien should approach this, guys?
Funnily enough, Damien, I've had a similar problem playing overseas at a club that didn't have turf facilities or turf practice facilities. And there's two issues, really. Firstly, you tend to find that the artificial pitches either bounce a bit more or are slightly quicker than your turf wicket, so to speak. I think the key there is when you are practicing, to spend some time, like in throwdowns, instead of having a mate throw the ball at you as hard as possible and the ball's coming onto the bat nice and quickly, to get whoever's throwing at you, just to sort of maybe slow it down a bit and throw it at sort of a medium or a medium slow pace, which would force you just to wait for the ball and play it really late and under the ice. It might just sort of help address that problem of practicing on a quick wicket and then going out into the middle and finding yourself playing really early and hitting a lot in the air. And I think the second issue regarding the bit of extra bounce or maybe the variability in the bounce, look, there's not much you can do about that. And it's, you know, it's really a confidence thing. But what I would like to suggest is when practicing, try and play as if you were playing in a match. So in other words, if you're practicing on an artificial wicket that's bouncing more than maybe the wicket you would be batting on in a match, if it is on that in-between length, don't be tempted to play back to adjust for that extra bounce. Play as if you were playing in the middle. So push forward as hard as it is, and as easy as it is to say, it's really not easy to do. But look to just keep things as similar, or at least your technique is similar when you're practicing as to when you're playing on a Saturday.
The way I look at it is it's a similar problem really to what we have over here in the UK, which is you practice indoors throughout the winter. The indoor sports halls are all very fast pitches and they're flat, you know, there's no variation, there's no movement off the seam, very little anyway, and there's no very little swing, so it's quite easy to bat on those pitches. You can hit through the line and you can hit on the up, and there's no dangers there. And then when you get out into the early season in April, early May, the skies are overcast, the pitches are wet and the ball sticks in them, and it's a totally different proposition. So everybody who plays cricket over here experiences that every season. They need to get used to those pitches. And especially if you're in your situation, you practice on one type of pitch and you play on another type of pitch, that's a real problem, because the ideal is you finish practicing on one type of pitch and you practice and play on exactly the same type of pitch, because then you get used to it. If you absolutely can't do that, there's a couple of things that sprung to mind that you could do. One is maybe you can spend more time on getting your technique right rather than playing practice type matches and having nets and things like that. So maybe you want to spend more time grooving your technique, getting your front foot drive perfect. So doing tennis ball feeds, things like that. So when you go out into the middle, you know that you've got a good technique, and that gives you a bit more confidence to be able to play forward, select the right shot, get your timing right. It gives you that little bit of confidence, makes a big difference. And the other thing that I thought is maybe you can find a way of slowing those concrete pitches down. What we do here is, if you want to slow a pitch down, we get two of those rubber mats that you put down in indoor nets, if you've ever seen those, the thick rubber mats that protect the sports hall surface from the cricket ball. We get two of those and put them on top of each other, and that slows the pitch down quite a lot. So, because it really deadens the impact. So that's the other thing. You could, again, it's not perfect, but if you can get some kind of matting to put down, then maybe that will more accurately reflect what's going on in your matches. But it is a difficult one, and there's no perfect way to get around it.
Well, guys, Damien has another question, and he says, I hear a lot about getting your eye in, but is it more about than just leaving the ball alone outside off stump and avoiding playing the big shots early on? What do you think, Nick?
Yeah, I think the key, Damien, or to Damien, is just the need to play low-risk cricket, you know, to pack away the expansive shots until you're sort of over that nervous sort of scratchy phase, until you start feeling more comfortable with the pace and the bounce of a pitch and just the environment in general, you know, and when your sort of natural and reflex ability starts taking over rather than that sort of stiff nervousness. And I think that's what really people refer to when they say get your eye in, you know, just keep it as simple as possible, try and keep it as tight as possible until you start feeling comfortable.
When you say get your eye in, it's a shorthand way of saying playing the first few balls that you face in a way that gets you used to judging the pace and bounce of the ball. So if someone's bowling way outside the off stump, that's great, because you can see exactly what the pace is doing and how much it's bouncing before you even have to play a shot. It doesn't mean just thinking, right, I'm going to block everything for the first 10 balls. It means playing the percentage shots. So the percentage shots are the straight bat shots, the hitting the ball in the V when you know you can hit with the full face of the bat safely. And if you feel a few off the middle of the bat, then maybe then you can start to expand into the wider shots. Maybe you want to keep things like the extra cover drive, the cut, unless it's a real long hop, the cut. And just think about letting the ball go if you don't have to hit it, defending it if it's a good ball, and if it's a really bad ball, hitting it straight back past the bowler, either through the onside or through the offside. Not many batsmen have a great on drive. So if you can work on a good on drive, if you get a half volley on that leg stump, rather than having to block it or trying to work it through square leg, which is always risky, you can just keep a straight bat, hit it straight back through mid on or past mid on, and you can get a nice easy boundary if you know how to do that. But not many players know how to do that, especially if they're the type of players who are looking for that cover drive instead. They're tipping to the offside, they're trying to hit it through there, they're thinking, when can I unleash my brilliant shot? But it looks a lot better if you hit it through mid-on than it does if you try and whack it through extra cover and nick off to second slip. The other side issue about that question is, how long does it take to get your eye in? And that is going to vary quite a lot as well. I mean, not only does it vary between players, you get some players who are just, you know, they've naturally got good hand-eye coordination. Someone like Kevin Peterson, he's got good hand-eye coordination. You know, he gets his eye in a lot quicker than normal human beings. But then you've got the conditions as well. If it's a very tricky batting conditions, if it's a difficult wicket, if the conditions favour the bowler, the weather favours the bowler, it's going to take you a bit longer to get used to that, the ball moving away from you or dipping in off the seam or whatever. It's going to take a little bit longer. Whereas if it's a completely flat track, the skies are blue, the bowling's lovely, little medium, dibbly-dobbly medium place, gun barrel straight, then you might get one early on that you can hit straight back past the ball and you think, oh, this is easy. And, you know, you've got your eye in within two or three balls. And it can vary greatly. So take into account the conditions as well when you're deciding when you've got your eye in. And don't just think just because you hit a boundary early on that you think, well, I must have my eye in now. If it's difficult conditions or it's a tricky bowler, then you might have to take a little bit longer to play yourself in before you get the big shots out. There's an example of that to its extreme. Andrew Strauss, a few years ago, his place in the England team was in jeopardy. And they went on a tour to New Zealand. He'd been dropped, but he was recalled for the tour to New Zealand, and he had to get runs, and he cut out pretty much every single shot apart from the flick off the legs. And he scored 160-odd, basically just flicking it off his legs. So that's taking it to the extreme. He knew he needed to get a score, and he just went about doing it by playing as if he was getting his eye in for the entire innings.
And that, another good example of that would be Gary Kirsten, the style of his play. He basically had three or four scoring shots, and he just sort of stuck to them and didn't waver from them. It's just it's sort of that personal discipline that you sort of require to score runs consistently, you know, that I think is the key there.
Thanks for that, guys. And our last question for today is from Bunny. And they say, I'm now age 18 and I still want to become a professional cricketer. Is it too late? How old can you leave it?
Look, there's no doubt that it's definitely easier to become a professional cricketer if you've been in the junior provincial setup, and you tend to get fast-tracked through the academies and into the provincial teams. That being said, however, it's not impossible to do it the long way around. That being, you know, if as there are a lot of players that sort of mature at a later stage in their cricketing careers and only really start coming to the fore after 1 or 2 years of club cricket. But like I said, it is a lot harder, and they have to score big club runs consistently or take some serious wickets consistently to get noticed. But it's not impossible, and they do end up getting noticed if they manage to sort of find that level of consistency and then end up, you know, getting into a provincial squad and hopefully getting a fair run in a provincial side. So, yeah, like I said, not impossible, but definitely a lot harder the sort of older you get and if you haven't been in a provincial setup.
And that would be sort of an academy type setup, would it? Where you know they picked up after school or sort of 16 to 18 and they start playing academy level games.
Yeah, not necessarily. What tends to happen is it's actually in South Africa, it's just a bit of a warped system sometimes.
Right.
But people that sort of are picked or young players that get picked at under 13, 14, 15 level end up staying in the system all the way through to you know, under 18, under 19, and then either moving on to the academy or sort of getting slotted straight into a provincial or a provincial B team. The academy generally is sort of seen as a bridge between club cricket and provincial cricket, but it's in a funny place in South Africa at the moment, the provincial academies at least. So I'm referring more to sort of the schoolboy cricket, you know, and being in the provincial school teams and then sort of just getting channeled up all the way through there to senior cricket.
It's slightly different over here in the UK. I don't know where Bunny's from, so we're gonna have to just talk about the experiences from our own country. So it's slightly different here in the UK. Here in the UK, if you're a decent player as a teenager, then yeah, you have sort of representative level cricket, and the best of those get picked into academies at the ages of about 16 or 17 or 18. And then they go through into county second 11 cricket if they get a contract. So if you're talking about an 18-year-old who hasn't already been picked up by academy, that's already getting more difficult. That doesn't mean it's impossible. There's an example of a bowler over here called Charlie Shrek, who plays for Nottinghamshire, and he finished quite late. Well, he started playing professionally relatively late. He was playing for his club. He's playing club cricket. And he was playing minor counties cricket, which are the counties who aren't the professionals. And he was doing well, and he was doing well enough to think, I could be good enough to play professionally here. And he wrote to several counties to say, please, can I have a trial? Which sounds like a very old-fashioned thing to do. But Nottinghamshire said, sure, come and have a trial with us. So he played a couple of second 11 games for the county. And they said, yep, you're good enough. He got some wickets. He said, yep, you're good enough. And now he is a professional cricketer. And he, for a while, there was, you know, talk of him around the England setup, although he's not in it at the moment. But it just goes to show that you can leave it late. The other example, the other sort of way of doing it over here in the UK is Monty Panesar. And the way Monty did it was he played club cricket as a young boy, very talented club cricketer as a teenager, but he didn't know for sure whether he was going to be a professional cricketer, so he went to university. He played cricket at university. He went to a very good cricketing university. He played cricket at university, and he played second 11 cricket as an amateur in the summer holidays. Got his degree, nothing to do with sport at all, some sort of business related degree, and he started playing professional cricket when he was 24 years old. So you know, that's getting on, relatively speaking. That's getting on. So you can do it, but I think the key is you have, whatever you're doing, whatever age you are, you have to be getting absolutely stacks of runs or wickets at the level that you're currently at. So if you're playing, you know, friendly cricket on a Sunday and it's a very poor standard, but you're getting stacks of runs and wickets, then fantastic. You're on the way. But you have to go to the next level. You have to find, like in England, we have Premier League clubs. You have to find a Premier League club to go to and see if you can get stacks of runs and wickets there. We have minor counties. See if you can get stacks of runs and wickets in the minor counties. If you can do that, then you can turn around and say, look, I'm 19 years old. I got 65 wickets last year for my Premier League club, but they won the league. You can go to a county and say that and you can see if you can get into the system sort of through the back door, if you like. But generally speaking, the older you get, the harder it gets and the more difficult it gets. But at every age, almost, you can find someone who beat the odds and did it. I mean, even Dirk Nannis, the Dutch Australian, he wasn't playing professional cricket, I think, until his late 20s. But that was a choice he had. He decided not to play professionally. He decided he wanted to do something else. Then he came back to the game. So it can be done. It can be done. But don't, you know, if you're not playing, be realistic with yourself. You know, if you decided to take up cricket at 18, then you've not got much of a chance. But if you're playing good standard club cricket and you think you can take it to the next level, then go for it.
I think your point on having to play at the highest possible level is also very, very important. For example, here in South Africa, we've got our leagues, our club leagues, are divided into like the 1A, the 1B, and the 1C. Those are the three Premier Leagues. If you're playing in the third tier, like the 1C, it doesn't matter how many runs you're scoring. You're not going to get noticed. You have to really work your way up to the first side of a 1A club, of a Premier League club, and perform at that level before you can expect to sort of make that step up to a provincial amateur side and then hopefully to a professional cricketer side.
And it doesn't really matter what the system is. I mean, we don't know what country, maybe you're in India or in Pakistan, the system would be different in those countries. Australia, it's different again. But it doesn't really matter what the system is. The key is to get into it at some level and start pushing your way up it as quickly as you can. And you'll meet resistance, you'll meet politics, you'll get guys who have been doing it since they were 10 years old, and they're going to be ahead of you in the pecking order, and that's going to be hard if you're talented. But if you can keep going, work within whatever system you've got, and just keep working towards it, you can do it. But be realistic as well. I don't want to give you false hope. As I said before, if you're just taking up the game at age 18, then it's a very slim chance indeed of being a professional cricketer compared to someone who's been doing it since they were 5 years old and has got bundles of talent.
And that's actually a very good point again, because we see a lot of that back down here in South Africa. Guys that put everything, into being professional cricketers, and then by the time they're 25, 26, they realize, look, it's just not going to happen. They're not going to make it. And they haven't sort of forged some other career option for themselves. So it's important to sort of strike that balance so that you if it doesn't work out, hopefully it will, but if it doesn't, that you do have other options in life, with regards to making a living or, an education of some sorts.
Thanks for answering those questions, Nick and David. And as you both know, every week we have our Pitch Vision competition that gives a free course from Pitch Vision Academy to the best question for the week. And we have a few really good ones. David, who do you think takes away the free Pitch Vision Academy course for this week?
I'm going to be really biased this week, Kevin, and I'm going to give it to the wicketkeeper. So, Seb, interesting question about standing out as a wicketkeeper. So it made us think a little bit about what that actually means. So, yep, I'm going to give it to the wicketkeeper.
Very nice, David. And all Seb did was email in his question with the title podcast competition, and now he's walking away with a Pitch Vision Academy course for free. So that's all you have to do: email in your question, have podcast competition in the title, and email that to mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. That's mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. And you can have more information, tips, advice, and tricks on our website at www.pitchvision.com. The site is updated daily and includes forums to chat with other cricketers around the world. You can also subscribe to the Pitch Vision Academy show for free on iTunes, or you can click the link on the show's page that will take you directly to iTunes to subscribe. Stay tuned for our next show on the 21st of May. So if you want to get in touch with us or have any questions, you can email us at mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. It's mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. So this is Kevin Sampath from Sydney, Australia, signing off.
And this is David Hinchliffe in the UK.